Well, as we begin to bring ourselves to the scriptures this morning, I wanted to first invite us to participate in an exercise. And you don't need to get up, and so you should feel relief there. But what I do want to do is I want you to take, we're going to take about 10 seconds, and just from your seats, I want you to try to see how many red items you can see in our sanctuary. We're going to take 10 seconds, just from, like I said, from your seats. I want you to just count in your head, how many red items do I see in this room? We understand the directions? All right, go for it. Look around, make mental notes. How many red things do you see? Okay, we got it? We got a number in our heads? Okay, so now I invite you to close your eyes. And I want a very bold person to call out how many things they saw in this room that are blue. You can open your eyes. I think it's fair to say that when we're not looking for something, we don't even see it, right? At least not in a meaningful way. There's lots of blue things in this room, but that exercise came to mind for me, at least in particular this week, because I think that when we are intentionally trying to see something, it makes it hard to see other things in a meaningful way. And I think that that's a very timely reminder for us this morning that there are many who are convinced that God is not working in a meaningful way around them and in their situation, when the reality is probably far more likely that he is working in a number of ways that they are simply not seeing because they are not looking for it that way. And I don't have to convince many of us that there is a war going on every single day for our attention, for our eyes, for our hearts to be looking at, to be drawn to be spending time with. The world's most powerful companies, they don't sell products, they sell us at this time. They market how many people they can get to look at any one thing. And it's not by randomness, it is by design. I wonder if you've ever picked up your phone to check the weather, for instance, and then 30 minutes pass and you go, I forgot to check the weather. Right? You get your phone and you see that you had a text message, and so you click on that, and then you go, oh, this person's asking me about, and so then you hop over here and you figure, and you go down this rabbit hole of notifications and buzzes and lights and all of those things, then you realize you didn't even remember to check the weather. You're trying to get dressed. You got places to go, right? I don't know if other people have felt this same level of kind of anxiety or impatience after spending long periods of time staring at a screen, that you set it down and all of a sudden you're tired, even though you didn't do anything but sit down and stare at your phone. I think that something that is very important for us all to realize is that we are being formed by what it is that we give our attention to. And if we're not careful, our digital habits in particular can shape us more than Jesus does. I came across a TED Talk this last week that I thought was really, really interesting. It was by a man named Dino Ambrosi. It was called The Battle for Your Time. And he began by putting up a bunch of dots like this one. And he said, the dots on the screen, they represent how many months an adult life has, assuming a life expectancy of 90. Okay, now this is judging by if you are 18 years old, how much time you have left if you are going to live to the age of 90. And so I don't know if other people sort of look at that like I did and go, feels like not as many dots as I thought there would be. But then he went to break it down. You know, this is how much time that we, maybe the average person, will have. But now how do we spend it? And he said, well, a third of that time is spent sleeping. 288 months of our lives. We don't even get all of that to just do things that we want. We have to sleep. We have to rest and re-energize. And then he said, in addition to that, many of us have work or school that we are going to spend quite a bit of our time at as well. 126 months of our lives sitting in those spaces. Again, these are averages. And then there's other things that we do, like cooking and eating, driving to and from places, time spent in the bathroom. If you take my wife's time and my time getting ready, I guess you land on an average that must be somewhere in there. Additionally, just running errands, all of these things that we have to do. There's no say that we have in whether or not there will be time spent in our lives doing these things. And so what he said is this leaves us with an estimated 334 months left. This is where you make a difference in the world. This is where you leave your mark, just not what you do, but who it is that you become. And so ask yourself if you were to look at this, most of us in this room are over the age of 18, and so the time is even less. What is it that you want to do with that free time? Those remaining 334 months. But this is where his TED Talk became very sobering, because he said today the average 18-year-old in the United States is on pace to spend 93% of that remaining time on their phones. And I don't want us to paint too bleak of a picture to start our time this morning, but I do think that there's something very important here for us to see, that the average screen time that we have, that 5 hours per day that I highlighted the first week that we did this study, the average American spends 5 hours per day staring at their phone. That happens during this time. And what might happen if we get to the end of our lives and have to ask ourselves, what could we have seen or done with 26 years of extra time? And then maybe another question for us to ask ourselves is, what do you think 26 years of screen time might do to a human being and a human brain and a human heart? Do you think it's possible that we might find ourselves much further away from the goal that we set at the start of our lives than we desire to? There's a reason why it feels harder for us to focus, harder to be present, harder to deeply engage with God and others in recent years. And it's because we are swimming upstream against an entire design, a system designed to distract us. Psychologists have identified something called the Google effect, which is essentially internet-induced amnesia, because if we can instantly look up anything that we ever want to know, our brains have stopped doing the things they used to do. For instance, storing information. People under the age of 25, you may not realize this, but at one point in time, we used to memorize each other's phone numbers. Do you remember that? Now, if you are over the age of 30, I might say, do you still remember like your home phone when you had a landline at your house? To be totally honest, I'm 33. I could more confidently say my childhood phone number than I could say my wife's current cell phone number. That's how it is right now, because I never really had to memorize that number. But 605-348-9879 was in there, right, from a very early age. But it's no longer needed for us to memorize those things, because we can look up almost whatever we want when we want. We don't remember things because our devices do it for us. But here's a question that was kind of interesting for me to wrestle with over the course of this last week, and I asked a few individuals I got the chance to speak to what they thought of it. If we are beginning to outsource more and more of our memory to technology, what else do you think we might be outsourcing? Are we outsourcing our relationships to things like text messages and likes instead of real conversations? Do we feel like maybe there's a sense of outsourcing our faith to quick verses instead of deep communion with God? Are we outsourcing our purpose by passively consuming content rather than trying to creatively make something ourselves? We have a crisis of attention, a crisis of formation. And if we do not take control, somebody else, an algorithm, a corporation, a cultural force, they will happily shape us in their image as opposed to the image of Christ. And that is why we've been 4 weeks in this series Unplugged, this series on presence, this series that, by the way, My heart breaks for so many in our church who disappear in the summer months. This is why we need conscious, intentional ways of structuring our lives, not in any regard to satisfy God, but to make sure that we do not simply get swept along by whatever it is that is easiest and feels the most immediate in any given moment, but that we might instead be shaped by something so much bigger, so much more eternal, so much more lasting. Now, that being said, this is a very real problem in our world today, but actually this battle for our attention has not always, or is not a brand new problem. We actually have the ability to look at the scriptures and get guidance in this topic in particular. And so if you brought your Bibles, I'd encourage you to get those out at this time. Thank you so much for bringing them if you did. We're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 5 this morning. 1 Peter chapter 5. Beginning in verse 7. And it reads like this: "Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings." So a little bit of context here. Peter is the one writing this, and he's writing to Christians who are scattered around the Roman Empire, many of whom are facing very real persecutions, whether it is the loss of homes or the loss of jobs, social standing. Some of them are as far as being thrown into prison or their lives being taken for the faith that they have. But I think what's very striking about the passage in that context is that Peter is acknowledging the very real, immediate struggle that the people are facing. But then he begins to warn them not just about those external threats. Instead, in these few short verses, what he does is he attempts to shift their focus to something deeper, something far often overlooked, and that is spiritual complacency. Peter reminds them in this moment that Rome is not their greatest enemy. It's not even the culture around them. It's the one working beneath it all, the enemy of their souls. And if that is true for them, I have to say confidently, that is the very same threat that we face today. Peter commands them. He says, be alert and of sober mind to this fact. Now, this word alert here means to stay awake, like to be watchful. It's the same word that Jesus used when he told his disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane to watch and pray that they will not fall into temptation. But unfortunately, God's people have not always heeded this command over the years, to be watchful and alert and of sober mind. And for me, at least, since I've become a pastor, I feel like what I noticed in particular was a shift around the year 2020. We now have millions of followers of Jesus who at that time, their rhythm got disrupted and they never found their way back. And at this point in time now, there are millions of followers of Jesus who are frankly too distracted to ever experience God's presence in a meaningful way again. And that breaks my heart, but in particular as a pastor who is invested in a community of faith here in Harrisburg and a people that I've got the chance to see your faces and learn your names, it makes me that much more fiery about trying to drill this home for you as well, that we are a people who are alert and of sober mind of how our spiritual lives are being nourished and connected to God. We mentioned in week one, on average, we check our phones 96 times per day. That's once every 10 minutes on average. 85% of smartphone users say their devices are always 24/7 within arm's reach of them. And the average person spends almost 5 hours per day on their smartphone, which comes out to 76 days per year. We are using our phones so much that they've identified new digital injuries. Have you ever heard of texting thumb? Anybody ever heard of texting thumb? Don't look it up. I don't want you to hurt yourself. But Smartphone elbow is another one where I don't know if you've ever been on your phone for long enough that your ring finger and your pinky starts to tingle a little bit. It's because of a prolonged bend in your elbow that your ulnar nerve is beginning to be pinched by just holding that position for so long. If you've heard of text neck, then you know the thing that's going to make me wish I was a chiropractor right now, because I'd get to retire so early. If you've never heard of text neck, I probably don't need to describe it to you. But it comes from us constantly being like this, looking at our devices. If Peter, I think, were writing to us today, he might say it like this. He says, be alert, because your constant scrolling is shaping your soul more than Scripture is. He might say, be sober-minded, because your attention is being hijacked by algorithms designed to keep you distracted with nothingness. Watch carefully, because your device isn't just a tool. It's a training ground. And the question for us is, who is training us? We don't typically, I believe, think of our digital habits as spiritual battles, but I believe that is exactly what they are. And Peter, he gives this vivid imagery of the enemy, saying, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Now, that Greek word for devour here doesn't simply mean like taking cute little nibbles off whatever's left over. It's a swallow whole type of image. It's actually the same word that was used in Hebrews chapter 11 to describe how Pharaoh's army was swallowed up by the Red Sea. If we're familiar with that story, did Pharaoh's army take a little dip in the Red Sea? No, they were consumed and swept away. That is this exact same imagery that Peter's trying to convey, talking about the enemy that we have, the spiritual enemy that we all face. I believe that Satan's ultimate goal isn't just to distract us, it is to consume us. And one of the primary ways that he does this, I don't think, is through outright evil, but it is through distraction. Because if the enemy can't make us bad, he'll just make us busy. If he can't destroy us, he'll just distract us. If he can't make us deny God outright, then he'll just make us forget about him. And I mean, think about it. When was the last time that you were fully present before God, completely uninterrupted? How often do you truly sit in silence for a considerable amount of time without reaching for your phone, without trying to turn on the TV, without trying to get someone else's perspective on the scriptures that maybe you just read? How often do you find yourself mindlessly scrolling compared to how much time you spend mindfully praying to the God that you believe reigns over all of this? This week, I finally got around to picking up C.S. Lewis's, I will call it, a brilliant book called Screwtape Letters. And I don't know if other people have gotten the chance to read this, but as I read it, I felt so much like this is where we currently are. In this book, C.S. Lewis, he imagines a conversation between a veteran demon and a novice one, essentially, and they're training this young demon how to win the war against humanity. And in this letter, a senior demon advises his apprentice on how to keep Christians ineffective. And this is what he writes. It's funny how mortals always picture us putting things into their minds. In reality, our best work is done by keeping things out. I saw someone create a modern version of this idea where they had drawn a picture of this really evil-looking guy, and the text says, "My dear Wormwood, disregard everything that we've taught you. Just get them to download TikTok. It'll do all of the work for us." I think the enemy doesn't need to fill our minds with evil if he can simply keep us too busy, too distracted, too scattered to focus on anything that really matters. And I've said this hopefully every week of this series, this is a very real area of struggle for me too. I'm not speaking as somebody who has totally nailed the dismount on this. So much of my own dysfunction and lack of health stems from this one reality as well, that I often find myself too busy, too distracted, too anxious, too overwhelmed by things that truly do not matter in the moment that I am currently walking in. But there's good news in the midst of this as well, that the enemy does not have the final word. And as much as Peter describes the devil as this lion that's prowling around, the Bible also tells us of another lion. In Revelation chapter 5, verse 5, it declares, "Do not weep. See the lion of the tribe of Judah, the roots of David. He has triumphed." Jesus, the true and greater lion, has already defeated sin and death and every scheme of the enemy. When we were lost to distraction, Jesus came to bring us back to the Father. When our attention was stolen by lesser things, he fixed our eyes back on the cross. When the world pulls us in every direction, he offers us the only true way of life. But this is a reminder for us, and why I think gathering together is something that we can never overlook. That when we get together in spaces like this, we get to recenter our minds on that truth that many of us have already heard many times, but often forget. And as we seek to get very practical to wrap up this series, this is the last week that we're going to be in this, I want to say this one thing. Christianity is not primarily about our disciplined pursuit of God. It is about recognizing God's relentless pursuit of us. That is our starting point. When we get together, we realize, we get to remember the fact that we are not trying to do this by our own strength. We don't get to experience the abundant life that Jesus talks about when we get our habits in order and when we deal with our technological addictions and when we get our life structured and we have our finances looking a certain way, then we get to experience all of these things. The gospel of Jesus Christ is to highlight that he is relentlessly pursuing us. That at the cross of Jesus, he took every sin, every distraction, every way that we were longing upon himself. Which means that now through Jesus, we don't have to live these scattered lives, distracted and feeling distant from God. We've been invited to walk in the kingdom of heaven, not after we die, but right now, today, as soon as we are able to open our eyes to what is truly around us. And this, if you haven't caught on yet, is not just about fixing our phone habits. It's about following the one who's set out to rescue us. Which means the question that we need to answer is, will we surrender our attention and our focus and our very lives to him? Because Peter doesn't just tell us to be aware. He tells us to resist. He says, resist him, standing firm in the faith. And for those who appreciate a good word study, I've ever given a few this morning, the Greek word for resist here is actually a military term. It means to stand and take your ground against an enemy attack. It's the same word used in Ephesians 6 where Paul tells us to put on the full armor of God so that we can stand firm against the enemy's schemes. This is not a passive command. This is an active strategy. I watched School of Rock this last week. I don't know if there's any Jack Black fans or whatever. This feels like one of the most punk rock things we can do is simply to stand firm against the stream of culture that is constantly flowing past us. In an age of constant scrolling and distraction, anxiety, gospel presence, simply looking people in the eyes and seeing sacred humanity within them, bringing the gospel to every table. We've talked about that before. And for those who maybe were here for all of that, or it's been a little while since you've thought about it, this idea of bringing the gospel to every table is in some ways maybe metaphorical, where it's saying, you know, any opportunity that you have to sprinkle in a conversation of faith around the table, you should take advantage of that. But in a very practical sense, it can mean something as simple as saying, before every meal we eat, I am going to pray. I am going to pray for this meal. And by doing so, you simply open the door to a conversation of faith, whether you initiate it beyond that point or not. We are invited. We are encouraged. We are pleaded with by Jesus, but then also the apostles that came after him to simply recognize the gift that is in front of us. But then also acknowledge the threat to that gift. And so what is it that is shaping your life? Is it algorithms or is it the wisdom of Scripture? Is it the pull of notifications, or is it the still small voice of God? Are you actively resisting distraction, or just simply hoping that it doesn't fully consume you? I think this is pretty unpopular to say, but I think it's my job to say it anyways, that our world has become so disordered that discipline has begun to feel like legalism. That any time we try to speak up against something and call a different course of action in face of something that's going on, there's this defensiveness that many of us feel that say, who are you telling me how to live? Why Jesus loves me? Why legalism is not the same as discipline. And I can't help wonder why Peter, or what Peter might have said to us. This isn't about legalism. This is about formation. It's about crafting a life where we are being shaped more by Jesus than our devices or anything else. And so how do we do that? Because I think distraction is one of the primary tools the enemy uses to keep us from deep, meaningful connection with God and others. For centuries, Christians have practiced what is called a rule of life. Not rules for life, but a rule of life, a set of rhythms and habits designed to simply shape their daily lives around Jesus. As best as I can tell from the beginning of church history, for the first 300 years or so, the main thing the church argued about was theology. You know, they talked about things like the Nicene Creed versus the Apostles' Creed. Which one do we want to make our, you know, they were very kind of trivial, just nitty-gritty conversations about theology. But from the 4th century on, with Saints Benedict and Patrick and Augustine, it seems like one of the main things that they discussed was a rule of life. Now, the word rule, because that's kind of what I'm doing this week, apparently, comes from the Latin word regular, meaning a straight piece of wood or a ruler. It's by extension just a pattern, a model, an example. And some have argued that the word is actually tied to the picture of a trellis. For those who are gardeners, maybe you're familiar with a trellis. Without one, a vine sort of just lays on the ground, right? It's vulnerable. It's unable to bear fruit. But with the trellis, it's able to climb that trellis and grow strong and healthy and productive. And at the same is true of our spiritual lives. That if we don't intentionally structure our time, our devices, I believe, are already doing it for us. And so as we draw to the end of this kind of digital challenge, I want to ask you, what kind of trellis are you building? What kind of structure over the last few weeks are you developing? Or are you maybe thinking about developing? What kind of digital habits are you willing to keep that will help you grow towards Jesus rather than pull you away from him? Annie Dillard once put it, how we live our days is how we live our life. Most of us desire to live well-rounded lives that reflect what we truly believe about God and ourselves, and yet it is not uncommon for us to move through our minutes, hours, months, days, years with one area consuming far more of our energy than we ever intended it to, leaving little time for things that we say are truly important to us. And so in a moment, I want to give us some time to actually write out our own digital rule of life. Hopefully you got a bulletin when you came in this morning with these cards on it. And if you have it, I'd encourage you to get it out at this point. And we have pencils in the back of the pews. And if you brought pens, you can get those out. But I want to just take a moment during our service to write some things down. Some I will do this so I can do this as a reminder for us. And I know that this part's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. But I also want to encourage you during this time, not just to write something down, but to share it with another person. Because I know just as well as everybody else in this room, it is so easy to participate in a 4-week series like this and get to the end of it and go, that was really interesting. But then kind of wipe our hands with it and go do other things, right? We forget what it is that was so interesting about it, so meaningful in the moment. And I want us to actually put pen to paper and tell somebody else, hey, this is what I am going to try to do. I'm not going to do it perfectly, but this is what I'm going to try to do. And I just ask you to maybe be a bit of an accountability partner as I try to live a little bit differently of a life. For me, I have a couple things. One of which was my wife is much better about screen time than I am, and so I made the very risky decision that for our family, we have a regular rhythm of on Mondays we eat pizza. That's kind of our thing that we look forward to each week to make Mondays a little bit more exciting than they already are. We get pizza at the end of it. And I told her this week, I said, I want to start at the end of the weekly, at the end of the week, when we look at our average screen time for the day, whoever had the highest screen time, I want them to start buying the pizza. And it's going to be me for weeks. I know it will. But that's my thing, where it's like, you know what, this is going to light a fire in me and keep it at the forefront of my mind. You'll also notice in your bulletin that I have some kind of really practical steps that I wrote down on these bookmarks for you that we've mentioned over the series, and maybe some of those are meaningful to you and you begin to adopt them, or maybe you just take them home and pray over them and see if some of that can be meaningful for you as well. But I have one other example that I wanted to share, that something that I've been trying to do over the last couple weeks that truly has already, I think, been very special for me and my family. And it's going to sound very minuscule, but that's how this can be. When I get home from work, I plug my phone in on the charger until our son Leland goes to sleep. Now, that is not a considerable chunk of time. That's just a few hours. And yet, maybe others can relate to this. There are some times where I'm driving home and I'm just kicking myself for not getting all the things done at work that I meant to do. Or I'm wrestling with conversations that I had that didn't go the way that I wanted them to. Or I'm stressed about the amount of things that are coming up. And I pull into my driveway with all of those feelings still very much there. I don't know if anybody can relate to that feeling. You get home and work is still just like, it's all you can think about. What I've started to do, and this may sound like overkill, but I've started to just take a moment for a little driveway prayer. And it's just a little prayer to remind myself, Lord, help me to be the kind of husband and father that I know that you're calling me to be. And you can, I don't do it this exact way every time, but if you'd like to steal it, you definitely can. But I pull into the driveway and I say something like this to myself. I say, Lord, as I turn off my phone, I turn on my attention. And so make me quick to smile and slow to judge, and ready to play. Let what was unfinished at work not steal what is sacred at home. And what I didn't finish today, it can wait, but this little boy that I have right now, he's not going to be little forever. And so I just ask, Lord, would you help me be patient and joyful and present with him and Ashley over the next few hours at least. And I don't do that perfectly every single time, but it's just creating this kind of habit within myself when I pull into the driveway to remind myself not to let my attention be stolen, to live by distraction as opposed to participating in the things that I've worked so hard to be able to experience. And so I want to give us just a few moments. I asked Joan to play piano for just a couple minutes. I invite you to prayerfully write something on those cards that speak to a new commitment that you might make today about, I will do this, not so that you can earn right standing with God or so you can feel better about yourselves, but I'm going to do this so that I can ultimately do this. We're going to give just a few moments, and then I'll invite you back. But let us be in prayer and in writing.
Thank you.
you can continue to write if you need so. But as we wrap up the series, I just want to remind us that this was never about just screens. We've consistently been talking about our relationship with technology, but the deeper question has always been, what kind of lives are we building? Who are we becoming? Where are we planted? The psalmist reminds us, blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked or stand in the way that sinners take or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Truth is, we are all being shaped by someone or something. And if we don't choose to be shaped by God and his word and his presence and his community, we will inevitably be formed by the culture around us, the algorithms we engage in, and the distractions that we allow. And I was just sitting in the chair, and I was thinking, I was like, I have prayed my whole life to be a husband and to be a father. And ever since I've known who Jesus was, I have wanted everyone that I care about to also know him. And I think about my own ways that I have probably fallen short and allowed distraction to get in the way of that. But I don't share that to get down on myself, but just to recognize that something's got to change. There's something so much better out there for us than maybe what we've currently been participating in. And for some of us in this room, technology maybe isn't much of a problem for you. You know, your screen time is zero. You don't even know how to use your phone. Then you should be considered lucky. But I think we all recognize that there are things that vie for our attention that pull us away from what really matters. And that's at the heart of this, that we would be alert and of sober mind to the goodness of God in the midst of those situations.